we'll proceed with the first case, number 10-2509, Reedsburg Utility versus Grady Foundation, or Foundries, I guess. Good morning.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Catherine Stadler of Godfrey & Kahn in Madison, Wisconsin. With me today is Patricia Wheeler and Brian Cahill. The district court and the bankruptcy court, in considering whether Reedsburg Utility Commission violated the automatic stay provisions of the bankruptcy code, got it wrong. Three exceptions to the automatic stay immunize Reedsburg's actions with respect to the efforts to secure a lien on the property of Grady Foundries for utility bills that were in arrears at the time of the bankruptcy petition. Section 362B3 protects all actions to perfect an interest in property to the extent that that trustee's rights are subject to perfection under 546B of the Bankruptcy Code. 546B, in turn, provides that a trustee's power to avoid a statutory lien is subject to any generally applicable law that permits an interest to be effective against an entity that purchases the property. Now, there are three distinct provisions of Wisconsin state law that create that retroactive perfection and the enforceability against a purchaser that allow Reedsburg to take advantage of the 362B3 exception. The first is the Municipal Public Utility Section, 66.0809 sub 3 of the Wisconsin statutes. Here, the Wisconsin legislature has given the municipal utilities, which are arms of municipal government in Wisconsin, the obligation, not the choice, the obligation to report delinquent utility bills to the treasurer. The treasurer, in turn, reports the delinquency to the county, and then the county places the delinquent utilities on the tax roll. The statute, 66.0809, provides a procedure by which the utility and the city and the county are to report these obligations.
Well, Ms. Adler, let me ask you about that 8089 language. What troubles me is it says that the arrears and penalty will be levied as a tax against the lot or parcel, speaking in the future. Doesn't that undercut your position that the interest in property arises as of the time the billing is sent?
I don't think so, but if you look at the companion statutes in Wisconsin that buttress 66.0809. In other words, when you look at the entire property taxation, municipal taxation scheme in Wisconsin, it doesn't become a problem. Actually, what 660809 says, and it's long, but it says will become a lien, but then later it says each delinquent amount becomes a lien on the it says the delinquent amounts become a lien, which suggests that the delinquency itself is what creates the lien right, and it doesn't refer to the future. But if you look at 70.01 of the Wisconsin statute, this is the statute that gives property taxes, and that includes things that end up on the property tax bill, including special charges, taxes, and assessments, are given priority and are explicitly effective as of January 1 of the year that they are levied. So by being included on the property tax bill, which is articulated separately in Section 74.11 of the statute, and by being given payment priority over other types of charges, special assessments.
7001 payment priority is just among payments received, isn't it? It's not as opposed to the rest of the world. It's just how the if a payment comes in that is not a complete payment, they're paid in the order of 7001.
That's correct, Your Honor, with respect to 74.11, which is the third Wisconsin statutory provision. I was referring to 70.01, which is the general property tax section. And that is the one that says the lien created under the property tax code is superior to all other liens and is effective as of January 1. So that's where the explicit retroactivity and the explicit enforceability against purchasers comes in. So you really have to read 66.0809, 70.01, and 74.11 together to understand what the Wisconsin legislature was intending to do when it gave municipal utilities the rights to place this lien. They intended to treat it as a property tax, which would be protected by, in addition to 362B3 of the property, of the bankruptcy code.
Clearly they intended it to be handled under property taxes. It's a question of timing, though, right?
It's a...
As to when that lien takes effect.
Well, right. The question before the court and the issue that Judge Crabb and Judge Martin both struggled with was the timing and whether the language we were discussing in 660809 is referring to future or retroactive lien rights. Reedsburg's position is that the interest in the property, which the code explicitly requires only an interest in property, it does not require a lien at the time of the bankruptcy petition filing. The interest in property needs to arise pre-petition. And based on the authority we've cited from other jurisdictions that relate the interest in property back to things such as the time of the tax appraisal process or the time of the issuance of the tax levy, there's clearly authority for holding that Reedsburg's interest in this property, while it did not mature officially into a lien or could not mature officially into a lien until the post-petition period, that the interest in property arose when the utility charges were incurred and unpaid.
So your argument is that when the bill comes out from the utility company, then the interest in property has arisen?
When the bill comes out and the time to pay the bill that's stated, 30 days, I think, or 20 days for commercial customers in Reedsburg, when that payment becomes delinquent, that is when the interest arises. And that's consistent with the reasoning in Parr Meadows and others.
Why is it then instead of when the utility service is provided even before the bill is sent?
Well, I think arguably it could be when the service is provided. If you analogize to the wage lien statute, which this court considered in AR accessories, the court held there that it was the time the employees provided the services and earned the wages that the lien arose. But then the wage lien statute went on to talk about delinquent wages becoming lien. So the idea that you have an obligation to pay the utility bill, and you have a period of time to do that before it becomes delinquent, is arguably what protects you from having a lien put on your property during the first 20 days, or having an interest in property arise during that first 20 days.
How did the city let the foundry get so far behind?
That's a good question.
How many months are we talking about here?
It's actually not that many. It's maybe 3 months. The reason is that Grady Foundries operates a metal smelting facility or a die casting facility. They press metal parts for use in the automotive industry. The vat of molten steel that is used to create all these parts is maintained at a temperature that allows it to be used for this purpose through the conduction of electricity through rods. So it is a very, very high energy usage. So I think the average monthly utility bill for Grady, depending on their operation, is around $600,000 to $700,000. So the $1.3 million is obviously very significant for Reedsburg, but it doesn't amount to a year's worth of unpaid bills.
I'm a little curious about that on your notice process. The notices that you sent were just for utilities provided during the year of the notice. I think it's 2009.
Correct.
And so is that done annually? So if there were amounts owed in 2008, a notice would have been sent, then a lien would have attached in 2008,
correct.
And then 2009 would be an entirely separate.
Correct.
But there, we don't have a 2008.
There was no 2008 arrearage, no. The first arrearage, I believe, arose in the spring or late winter or spring of 2009, and then the bankruptcy petition was filed, of course, in June of 2009. So all of the pre-petition services were used by Grady Foundries during the taxation year in the calendar year 2009. It does so happen that there were some immediately pre-petition services and payments that were the subject of other litigation and will likely be the subject of appeals to be heard in this court at a later date. But, yes, the
isn't your best argument this is a special assessment and you walk past all of this, all these problems of trying to put the various statutes together? If you say this is a special assessment...
Sure. Well, if you think that's the best argument, I'm happy to say that it is. I think it's a strong argument, and it does. Your question, Your Honor, points out the semantic issue that this case is so puzzling, that makes this case so puzzling to me as a bankruptcy practitioner, because the language that the bankruptcy code drafters chose to use in sub 18 of the automatic stay exception clearly allows special taxes and special assessments to sail through. We wouldn't be here today. And so it is the legislature's choice and the city clerk's choice and the county's choice to handle this type of charge as something else and not call it a special assessment that brings us here today. If you look at the way that special assessments are treated both in the Wisconsin statute and in the bankruptcy code, it's hard to decipher a difference between why something would be called a special charge versus a special assessment, since clearly the provision of electric utility to this business was adding value to the property and allowing it to function the way that it was. So it is akin to a municipal service that adds value to the property. And I believe it could very well...
Like a sidewalk? Are you trying to compare it to a sidewalk or a sewer connection or something?
Well, the special assessment statute doesn't only refer to sidewalks and sewers. It refers to all sorts of municipal services that could be viewed as adding value to the property and the maintenance of the property. And my position is that because this is a foundry, it doesn't have value as a property or the value that is ascribed to it in its use through without the provision of electricity that's provided by the city.
I could see that more easily if you were talking about, for example, the original installation to a greenfield development. We'll put in the high-capacity transmission mm-hmm. cables there,
mm-hmm.
And we'll give you a special charge for that.
Right.
I guess I have some trouble seeing how that works with just the routine monthly provision of service. What's special about that?
I think the question as I understood it was really more whether... if the legislature chose to recharacterize the provision of municipal electric services as something other than a special charge, wouldn't it easily fall into the B18 exception of the automatic stay, which would allow us to issue the notice that we issued? And I think the answer to that question is yes, the legislature could choose to call it whatever it wanted.
And frankly, one of the things that troubles me here is that this issue has been percolating for a number of years in Wisconsin.
Yes.
I think it was the U.S. Leather decision. Has there been any legislative response to this, to those decisions, to try to clear this up?
That's an interesting question. There's recently been a shift in management in the Wisconsin legislature. There has not been any legislative...
We're talking a number of years here.
Right. No, there has not been anything proposed as of yet, but as I said, with the change in... management at the state capitol in Wisconsin, a lot of new legislation is being proposed to address similar issues, and I would not be at all surprised to see something coming down the pike soon.
Ms. Stadler, I need to back you up just a little bit to a jurisdictional concern I have, and that is your client waived its objection to the sale of the property. Doesn't that moot your claim here?
No. First of all, we didn't as much waive our objection as we filed the objection, and then we got the ruling from Judge Martin holding that our actions issuing the notice was in violation of the automatic stay. Because our interest in the property that would mature into a lien under the state statute was the only basis we had for asserting an interest in property, we felt that we, in good faith, did not have standing to object to the sale of assets, so we withdrew the objection. At that time, there were already pending, however, this proceeding with respect to the automatic stay and a parallel proceeding that we initiated for a declaratory judgment adjudicating both the automatic stay issue and the ultimate avoidability of the lien, which was never reached. So both of those issues had been preserved at the time the withdrawal of the sale objection took place.
Do we have finality? I see we're into your red light. I'm going to give you a couple extra minutes for rebuttal because we've asked you a lot of questions. But do we have finality then, because you are now an unsecured creditor, and until the plan is finalized, we don't know what the payout's going to be and whether you would be paid out in your entirety?
Well, the authorities on finality in bankruptcy, as you know, are pretty clear. And when your status as a secured creditor is finally adjudicated, which it effectively was by the finding that we violated the automatic stay, that is considered a final judgment for purposes of appealability. Now, you're right. We do maintain our status as an unsecured creditor. This is a bankruptcy that disposed of the assets through a 363 sale. So the plan, has there been a plan? I think the plan is either in the process of being confirmed or solicited. But in any event, the treatment of unsecured creditors, you're correct, is still undetermined. I think the court can probably make its own estimation of what the likely treatment of unsecured creditors is under a Chapter 11 plan in a liquidating 11.
All right. Very good. Thank you. And I'll give you two extra minutes for a rebuttal.
Thank you.
Mr. Pickard.
Good morning.
Good morning.
May it please the court. To prevail in its appeal, Reedsburg Commission has to show that it clearly and squarely falls within one of the exceptions to the automatic stay. The burden is on Reedsburg to show that it, in fact, fits within all square, within all corners of any of the exceptions on which it relies. And these exceptions are to be narrowly construed. Reedsburg points to three different statutes upon which it relies to justify its violation of the automatic stay. The first of those three is 362B3, the one that opposing counsel spent most of her time on this morning. It's our position that there is neither an interest in the property pre-petition of June 30th, 2009, but more importantly, the state law, which is controlling here, does not specifically provide for retroactive application or retroactive perfection of the lien. There were three statutes cited. Statute 660809, which specifically pertains to the utility charges at issue. Statute 70.01, which is a property tax statute, and Statute 74.11 sub 12, which has to do with general collection of property taxes and appeals relating thereto. None of those statutes specifically states that any lien with respect to unpaid and delinquent utility charges applies retroactively. 66 is silent as to that effect. 70.01, which is the general property tax statute, provides only that real property tax levies and personal property tax levies apply retroactively. In fact, under Wisconsin law, 70.01 uses the language in the statute, retroactive, under 70.01. 74.11 sub 12 relates to how taxes are distributed and applied after collected by the treasurer. They have nothing to do with third parties. They don't address third parties. They don't discuss liens, perfection, or timing thereof.
Mr. Pickard, let me ask you, when you buy a house in Wisconsin that's served by a municipal utility, do you have to get a release from the seller that all the utilities have been paid up? I'm trying to understand how this works in a practical level.
As a technical matter, if I may, there are three different types of issues that arise in the sale of a residence. One is for unpaid property taxes, and the Wisconsin legislature allows the buyer and the seller to, by contract, arrange for that proration. If there is an absence of any such provision in the contract, then state law specifically provides by statute for a proration based upon the month in the year in which it is sold. With respect to special assessments, it's my understanding that state law is silent with respect to how to prorate that. Again, I assume it's a contractual matter. I have looked at the form in preparation for this case on the real estate transfer, and it seems to suggest the form itself that buyer will have to make good on the special assessments that would be incurred.
Well, how would that apply to utility bills if the seller got behind on utilities?
With respect to the delinquent utility charges, it's simply not a special assessment. Wisconsin law and federal law is relatively clear on this. Federal law, specifically the U.S. Supreme Court, has defined what a special tax and a special assessment really is. And in both cases, special taxes and special assessments relate to improvements to a specific property that benefit that property. The word itself, improvements, is significant. It's something that's done of a physical nature that improves the value of the property, whether it be a sidewalk or a sewer or things along those lines. By definition, special assessments and special charges do not apply to the provision of utility services, which is what we have here.
Let me just go back. Does the buyer of a house wind up getting stuck in Wisconsin with the seller's unpaid water or electric bills?
I think that the only way the buyer of the house would be stuck with that unpaid utility charge were for it to have hit the tax roll and for that charge to be billed, so that in Wisconsin we assess property taxes in arrears. Essentially, the assessment date, the tax lien date for property taxes, is January 1 of every given year. The assessment process and appeal process goes on throughout the course of the year, and the tax bill is issued typically around the second week, almost always on a Friday, the second week in December. If the tax bill would include a special charge or a special assessment, then potentially the buyer of that would be liable to that unless there was some other contractual provision. With respect to whether or not there is an interest in the property, it's our position, as Judge Crabb pointed out, that whatever interest there was in the property was far too speculative as of June 30th of 2009. At any point in time up through November 15th, the special charges for the utility, delinquent utility charges, could have been paid.
Well, isn't that true of the wages as well in our AR accessories case, that the wages were owed and unpaid but could have been paid any time prior, but yet they became an interest in property?
The reason that they became an interest in property in AR and many of the other wage claim cases that were cited was because Wisconsin's wage claim law specifically provides that the lien arises at the time the services are provided. That's not true here. Here, in 660809, which is should be the applicable statute that should address this, it merely says that the unpaid delinquent charges shall become a lien once they hit the tax roll. So that is the difference between those two.
Well, isn't that true for a life estate in real property, where you have to, the person that's going to take has to survive the grantor? I mean, if you don't do it, if you don't survive, you don't get it. But it's something that can be valued, and it can certainly be taxed for inheritance tax purposes. Isn't that so?
Your Honor, I would like to be able to answer that question, but I didn't do too well in my trust and estates class, so I can't. I'm sorry. There are two other exceptions that would apply potentially in this case that are cited by the Commission. One is under 362B9, which specifically pertains to what taxing authorities can do in order to make a tax assessment or conduct proceedings consistent with making an assessment. Some of those proceedings include an audit or a notice of determination. That section doesn't apply here. Reedsburg is not a taxing authority, and this is not a tax. That is agreed to and conceded by Reedsburg. And then finally, the only other applicable section that has been cited is Section 362B18, which specifically relates to special taxes, special assessments, and ad valorem property taxes. The Commission does not allege this is an ad valorem property tax. It simply is not. This is not a special assessment for the reasons I said earlier. It doesn't relate to a physical improvement that benefits this particular property. And likewise, it's not a special charge. Now, the Commission alleged that it was the clerk's choice to assess this as a special charge. Again, that's simply not true in Wisconsin. Wisconsin, by statute, defines what a general property tax is, what a special charge is, what a special assessment is, and what a special tax is. A special tax specifically provides, that statute specifically provides, that a special tax does not include a special charge, such as the one involved here.
All right.
Do you treat that as a question of federal law or state law?
I think the determination of whether something is a special tax, an ad valorem property tax, a special charge, or such, is primarily a question of federal law. Unfortunately, the bankruptcy code doesn't necessarily define all of those terms. There is help in Chapter 9, which relates to municipal bankruptcy, that specifically provides that a special tax is, again, something that relates to a physical improvement that benefits a specific property, as opposed to the type of service provided here.
All right. Any further questions? I see none.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Stadler?
Thank you. A couple of cleanup points. One, the definitions in Chapter 9 apply to Chapter 9. The definitions in Chapter 9 explicitly by their terms in the definition section are not applicable to other sections of the bankruptcy code. At most, that's guidance. It doesn't address the issue that we're addressing. The B18 exception that Mr. Picard was talking about, Grady suggests that the congressional decision to use the term special tax and special assessment in B18 somehow excludes other types of charges that may end up on the property tax bill. The legislative history to the B18 exception indicates otherwise. Cited at page 31 of our blue brief is the language from the congressional record, which shows that Congress intended to allow local governments, of which Reedsburg is undisputedly an arm, to utilize their statutory property tax liens in order to secure the payment of property taxes. It specifically recognized the need of municipal governments to place their collection of property taxes and other revenues in a priority position with respect to other creditors, such that their collection activities with respect to those types of obligations are immune from the automatic stay provisions of the bankruptcy code. The decision of what to call the assessment tax charge is a question of state law. The bankruptcy code defers to state law when it says...
But we're not bound by the title that Wisconsin gives it.
No, certainly not, but I believe a question had been asked earlier as to whether the characterization of the charge should be a question of federal law or state law. The purpose of my statement was that under 546B, the reference in the bankruptcy code is to a law of general applicability that provides for retroactivity, et cetera. That's where the bankruptcy code ends and the state law begins. So it's the state law and the Wisconsin legislature's definition of the charges.
Could I ask you, briefly ask about the question of residential sales by comparison. When does the buyer wind up stuck with a bill for the seller's delinquent utilities?
I think, you know, Mr. Picard is the tax lawyer. I'm not. But having purchased several houses in Wisconsin, I can tell you that the title companies require you to disclose unpaid real estate taxes, unpaid property taxes, unpaid utilities, and any unpaid bills that could mature into a construction lien. So if you had, you know, some repair work done that you hadn't paid for, anything that ultimately could attach as a lien has to be disclosed to the title company and is paid out of the proceeds of the sale before the seller receives the proceeds. When does the buyer officially get on the hook is probably, setting aside the practical realities of the way the title process works, Mr. Picard is probably correct. If anything that ends up on the tax bill is going to be the responsibility of the buyer. And here, of course, the utility charges do end up on the tax bill.
All right. Thank you to both counsel, and we'll take the case under advisement.